John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And, of course, a chance to catch up with Todd Archer, who covers the team, the Dallas Cowboys, and get a preview of what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. Let's check in with Todd Archer. Joining us right now on a Venue Kings hotline, Todd Archer from ESPN.com. And so, Todd, what do you make of this Cowboy team? Because obviously it's a team that has been, for whatever reason, struggling on offense, and it's very young on defense.
You know, I don't know what to make of this team because, Clay, this is the first time they've actually looked like they have a good defense, like a strong defense and a legitimate defense. And it's hard to get a read on it because the offense really – looks the same as it did late last season when they were unable to really do anything in the passing game. So I don't know if this is a team that can whip off 11 straight wins like they did in 2016 after losing their opener, or if they're just going to be on this win one, lose one train that they've kind of been on for a lot of the Jason Garrett era. This is a big game this Sunday for me for them to show that they have some legitimacy to them, regardless of what Seattle's record is, but just to go on the road and play well and win a game that maybe a lot of people think, well, they should win this one now with Seattle's start.
Yeah, so now when you look at the defense, I mean, they've chased away a lot of the high-priced guys, particularly in the secondary and that. They went with a young secondary and kind of paid a little bit of a price. How much better is the secondary this year?
It's a lot better, but I think it goes to their biggest acquisition this offseason is a guy that everybody up there knows quite well, and Chris Richard. He's been a difference maker in terms of just the belief that he's brought to these guys and the technique that he wants them to play. They're much more aggressive at the line of scrimmage with receivers, physical with guys, and they have the corners to match that. And Byron Jones, a tall, long corner, and Chido Uzie, their second-round pick from a year ago, another bigger, thicker cornerback that can handle things at the line of scrimmage. There's still some questions. You wonder about the depth. You wonder what's going to happen when they face some really good passing offenses as the year goes on. But they like what they have in the secondary, and we all waited for the Earl Thomas trade, and it still hasn't come yet. And now I don't know if it'll ever come.
So now, what has Chris done with the defense? Because I know that Rod Marinelli is a pure cover two guy, and I know that they let Chris call the plays last week against the Giants. Are they moved more into a cover one, cover three type of team, or are they still cover two? What do they do with man? What is philosophically what they do with the secondary?
And it's a lot of what everybody saw with the Seahawks is what they're doing. And really, the whole Rod Marinelli Tampa 2 thing, I think, has been misplaced over the years, because if you go back to his time in Chicago, they played a single high defense more than they ever did play a cover two with the talent that they had. And I think you're seeing more of that with the Cowboys this year, a lot of single high looks because they have faith in their cornerbacks. They bring down the safety a bunch to help in the running game. They're getting pressure from their defensive line. So what Chris Richard has really done is brought a lot of the same principles from the Seattle defense and merged them with Rod's defense. But their DNA in the scheme has largely been the same. I mean, Rod's been been with guys like Gus Bradley over the years, and all of that DNA from those defenses come from the same spot. So they're able to get on the same page rather quickly. And you're seeing what you are seeing more from Chris Richard is the blitzing, bringing in the linebackers, doing more than that. That's what Rod Marinelli really doesn't like to do. He'd like to rely on his front four. But so far, the Cowboys are bringing some linebackers a lot.
Yeah, speaking of linebackers, what's it look like for Sean Lee? I guess he's going to be game-time decision?
Game-time decision, probably. And he's got a little bit of a hamstring strain, cramp, tightening. I don't know how we want to call it. But it rings bells here when it's Sean Lee and a hamstring injury because he's missed five games with a similar deal last year. He told me after the game Sunday that it didn't feel the same as it did last season when he missed all those games. Was limited in practice on Thursday. Hopeful that he can do something, but I think where the Cowboys might be able to play it smarter this year that they haven't been able to in years past is they like their linebacker depth. Leighton Vander Esch, their first-round pick, he should play some more if Lee is limited or can't go, obviously. And Joe Thomas, a veteran pickup that they got in free agency, is another guy that's played well in his opportunities through these two games. So they feel better about their linebacker depth, really, than they've felt in a long, long time around here.
It looks like also they feel pretty good about their pass rush in general, and not just the blitzing, but what they're getting from the defensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, obviously a great season last year with a 14.5 sacks, another guy that really emerged on the scene. Cowboys gave him the franchise tag. Taco Charlton, their first-round pick last year, has come on and really played well. He's got a sack here and has really been able to pressure the quarterback. Tyrone Crawford is a guy who can get after the passer. So they have multiple pieces that they've put first, second, third-round picks into that are now starting to pay off. Not yet quite to the level of the offensive line commitments that they've made over the years with Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, and Zach Martin, but certainly seeing these guys come out and get to the quarterback. 9 sacks in the first 2 games. Only the Bears have more than the Cowboys.
Where does Malik Collins fit in the mix? Because I know he's been hurt. And what was the plans for him this year?
Well, yeah, he opened the season, or he opened training camp with a foot injury that he suffered in the offseason. Didn't really do much of anything in training camp. Now this week he's been dealing with a knee injury. So he's not been able to stay injury-free here. But when he's played well. The position for him is kind of in flux a little bit, because last year he played a nose tackle almost out of necessity, and then this year they've moved Crawford back inside because Collins has been hurt or not up to speed so far because of the injuries. So they like him, but again, he's hurt again, and they're really attacking this defense with their run defense with undersized guys. You know, Antoine Woods is really the only, quote, plugger you would see in there, and Rod doesn't like those one-gappy plugging type of guy, or two-gapping, one-plugging type of guys. He wants guys to get up the field, and this would be a game where you see Dayton Jones probably play his first game. He's 280 pounds, and he might play some nose tackle. Not really the body type you usually see at that spot.
I know on the offensive line they were so good, but the impact of Travis Frederick not being out there, how much has that impacted them?
Yeah, that's hurt a lot. Obviously, you take away one of the best centers in the game, that hurts you. Joe Looney's done a nice job, but you know, he's a backup. He's a guy that you can't expect to come in and play as well. And I think where they miss Travis is getting to that second level, moving up to those linebackers in the running game, and allowing Zeke Elliott to get some longer runs. And obviously, if Wagner plays this week, and we know that how the Seahawks want to play, getting to that second level for the offensive line is really important. But they miss him there. They miss him on the calls on the line, making sure everybody's on the same page. Looney's done a fine job. You can't say that the struggles are because Travis isn't in there. But I think if you had Travis Frederick next to a rookie guard and Connor Williams, you'd feel a lot better about it than you do with a veteran backup starting next to a rookie left guard in Connor Williams. And that's kind of been the issue the first couple games.
And then finally, Pete Carroll noticed watching the tape that they've expanded a lot of the running type plays with Dak Prescott and that. What kind of changes have they made with the offense?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Dak said it felt like he was back at Mississippi State a little bit last week. But if you go back to what Cowboys did in 2016, they did a lot of this RPO stuff, a lot of this zone read stuff with Dak. And they kind of got away from it a little bit last year. But it seemed against the Giants, they allowed Dak to have a bigger influence in the running game. And some of that is that the Giants always bid on Zeke. So they gave him avenues to run the ball. I don't know if it's that much different from what we saw in 2016, but it has been different in 2017. And the fact that the Cowboys can't really generate much of anything in the passing game, I'd say you'll still see a lot of Dak running the ball as they go forward, trying to make plays to keep drives alive. If you can't get it through the air, you might as well make sure you're in some third and short situations and make it better for your quarterback there.
Hey, Todd Archer, good stuff. Looking forward to seeing you at the game on Sunday. Todd Archer from ESPN.com.
Thanks, lady.
And of course, he joins us in the Venue Kings Hotline. That is the preview of the Dallas Cowboys. So we'll come back now and we'll get the grade book out, because it's time for the report card. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
The report card we do every day is grading the good, the bad, the ugly, all the happy things, the sad things, the crazy things, the sane things, all those things going on. By the way, got some news in baseball that just happened before we get into the report card. It looks like the report card turned out to be pretty bad for the Texas Ranger manager, because there's been a managerial change. And so they fired Jeff Bannister. He's been dismissed. And so they've got bench coach Don Wakamatsu taking over as the interim coach for the remainder of the season. So one change in baseball, Rangers firing their manager. Let's get to the report card, Maura. What do we have?
Well, just for you, Professor, it's pretty much all Browns Jets theme today, because there was so much that happened last night. After the win, you know, those fans waited since 2016 for a win, and they maybe got a little carried away. there's some footage of a bunch of Browns fans singing "We Are the Champions."
Oh. We are the champions. We are the champions. Don't stop a loser, 'cause we are the champions.
You got to be kidding.
One win and they have no time for losers.
One win since 2006. I mean, that is an F minus. That's about as bad as you can get. We are the champions. They're 1-1-1, and they barely squeaked out a victory over. And again, it was a fun victory. We give them that. But are you kidding me? They're going to say that we are the champions with that type of a game? Give me a break. I'm happy for them. They deserve something. But it's like, don't get carried away. It's like, you're still the Cleveland Browns. You're not going to win more than 5 games if you can even get to 5. That's all you're going to be able to do.
Well, you're not holding back on that one, Professor. Yeah, I think those fans deserve to celebrate and be really happy about that because they waited a long time. But
how much alcohol do you think went into that song? Because it sounded pretty slurred to me.
Yeah, well, the Cleveland police Twitter tweeted out last night, "We won," and then they said, "Wait, oh God, the free beer thing. Okay, Cleveland, stay calm. Go Browns."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whoever thought of that marketing campaign for Bud Light is a genius. I mean, that even the announcers on the TV were talking about it last night. Adam Schefter, all the sports writers are tweeting about it. They were even joking that Philly special-esque play that they used was called Dilly Dilly, which is a Bud Light campaign as well.
Right, right.
So much free marketing out of this.
Yeah, but look how long they had to wait because...
put those coolers in beginning of this season. So.
Right, right. Well, but still had to wait 3 weeks into the season before anything happened. I mean, that's pretty bad. But hey, good for the fans. I'm happy for the fans. F minus to those who sang.
Okay. I love it. Next up, I'm going to have you grade Coach Hugh Jackson and what he had to say after the game.
I mean, I'm going to watch the tape and make the right decision, the best decision for the organization and for a football team moving forward. That's my job. That's what I'll do.
Well, I mean, that's pretty benign. So it's like, kind of a C because it's, not descript in any ways, not tipping the hands. And I think that, he has to make a value judgment. First, he has to make an injury judgment. This is the third concussion for Taylor. Tyrann Taylor now has to be a big question mark because he may not be able to go. And so now you're in a position to go with Baker Mayfield. And see, one of the advantages I think Mayfield had in this particular game is that, he was able to go out there and you didn't have any scouting report on him. I mean, you can see a little of the stuff that he ended up doing, but it's one where I think that you can see in the end, it's still questionable which way to go. I still think you go with the more experienced quarterback, but the fans aren't going to go for that. The fans want Baker Mayfield. Now the coach has to make the right decision because again, this job's in jeopardy. And what will end up happening if Mayfield goes out there, they'll have a little bit more of a scouting report on him and know a little bit more what to do.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were thinking it was crazy after Mayfield's performance that he wouldn't just go ahead and name him the starter there. But then I think some people that were looking at it from a calmer perspective pointed out that Tyrod Taylor, suffered a concussion. And it would be kind of brutal to have to hear when everyone comes back into the locker room that the coach just did a press conference and announced that you lost your job. It might be something that's better if he sits down and talks to Tyrod Taylor afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Because again, it's like, okay, you make the move, but what happens if it's not working? Because, if it gets getting worse. I mean, again, I still question the decision to go with Sam Darnold. Yeah, it got him a victory in the opener. Good for them. But, what's happening now? He's now 1-2, and things are starting to slip away a little bit.
We'll see what happens. That would be very typical.
Mm-hmm. It's the Cleveland Browns.
Well, okay, so next up, we actually have one from the Jets side. Did you happen to see Isaiah Crowell's touchdown celebration?
I didn't see it, but I know that the Todd Bowles was furious about it. Describe what the touchdown celebration was.
I think the most polite way I can say it is that he pretended to defecate and then pretended to use the ball to wipe his butt.
Oh, nice. Well, that's a crappy celebration. Yeah,
not very good.
No, that one did not go over well. I know he had to apologize after the game. He expects to get some kind of a fine from it, which is, I think, very natural because, that's not a good move. And, I'm glad that they let the freedom of the players to go ahead and do that. I thought that's a very good thing, but don't abuse it. And to me, that's a way that you're abusing it. That's a bad celebration. And how many times has Isaiah Crowell been in the end zone? not many. So with that in mind, it's like, you know, do this like you've done it before. Be a professional about it. But that's not, I guess, what was on his mind. And so bad celebration. He's in the coach's doghouse, and he also didn't get the win.
Well, to be fair, he came from the Browns, so he hadn't done it much before.
I know, that's what I mean. It's like, guess where you come from and see where, you know, it does take you and all that stuff. So, yeah, very, very crazy thing on his part. So, you know, I'll have to give him a D minus on this one because bad celebration, not a good thing to do.
All right, next up we have Carlos Hyde. He had quite the day yesterday. So it was his birthday, his 28th birthday, and his girlfriend went into labor. And before the game, so his status was up in the air. They weren't sure if he was even going to make it to the game. He made it, but the whole time was kind of in limbo as to whether she was going to have the baby. And then he made it through the game, had one of his better games, 98 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns, and then made it back to the hospital sometime in between the game and this morning. They had the baby, and he tweeted out 8 pounds, 11 ounces, baby boy, Carlos Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the 24 hours for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's more almost as eventful as a Bills halftime when a guy quits in the middle of the game and they change the play calling on the defensive coordinator. I mean, you have to give him an A-minus because, again, he was dedicated to two things that were important to him. He was dedicated first to his wife, and I think that's the wise thing to do, good for him. And then the second thing is that, you know, he was dedicated enough to be as professional enough on the team. So I give him credit for that. So, no, I think you have to give him an A-minus, a very good grade, because I thought he did good work.
Yeah, I think that'll be a day that he won't forget for a long time.
No.
Your son have the same birthday. That's kind of cool.
Wow, that is good. Yeah, how about that? So Carlos, I like him. He's a good football player. I really like the way that he plays. I think that, you know, I'm happy that he was able to get something good for himself. That's good. So congratulations, Carlos. Good job by you.
Yeah, off to a bit of a rocky start with the 49ers, but things seem to be trending upward for him.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like I'm still surprised he's not a 49er. You know, the fact that he went to Cleveland and he was, you know, and he almost had a 100-yard game. So along with the fact that, you know, he's out there doing good things, he had a good game.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, you kind of predicted this because of the 3 games in 11 days for a rookie thing, but how did you think Sam Darnold did?
Not good. I mean, 15 of 31, 169 yards, sacked twice. I mean, his quarterback rating was 38-2. He just didn't play well. He regressed. And, you know, I know he was struggling to get the ball downfield. I mean, he did get one pass of 25 yards to Terrell Pryor, but, you know, it's a regress game. Now, again, you figured that could happen, and that's why I did predict it, because he was going against Greg Williams, and Greg Williams can come at you in a lot of different ways. I'll give him a C. Because, again, it's not his fault. To put him out there 3 times in 11 days, that's just not fair. And it puts him in a position to regress. And we'll see how he comes out of this stretch. The 10-day break right now can help him out, but it really does need to help him out.
All right, that's it for Grace today, Professor.
All righty, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. Text us at 710-710, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, it's time to take your text questions on this busy weekend. Washington State football tonight, Husky football tomorrow night, Seahawk football on Sunday afternoon. Give us a text at 710-710. So, Maura, what are we at?
425 says, what is the likely future... who is the likely future Mitch Trubisky in the NFL?
The future Mitch Trubisky in the NFL, I think it's going to be shaky, because what I look at is that, you know, he's got potential, he's got talent, but, I mean, he's not very accurate once he gets through on the script. And again, it's way too early to negatively judge him and put a proclamation on that he's not going to go. I mean, you saw that, you know, with Jared Goff. Everybody was, you know, writing him off after the first year, and you saw it. I think he's got a good coach in Matt Nagy that can help him out. But what I'm concerned about is that once the script is done after 15, 16 plays, he looks a little bit lost and tends to just kind of revert to short passes, and I think they can figure him out. You saw what Frank Clark had said, what he said after the game, just an average quarterback, not that good. I think that I'm not sold yet that he can be a good one.
509 says, hey, JC, do you think Todd Bowles should have started McCown in one of the three games, something similar to resting a starting pitcher when you have three games?
I really do, yeah. I mean, whether it was the second game or, I mean, you know, because I think probably it would have been better, I think, to maybe start McCown in the third game because, I mean, you have a veteran quarterback, you know, because you have no prep time. And you're prepping against Greg Williams' defense, and that's very complicated. And so maybe you could have played the first two games. You know, it was a little bit tougher to come back on the Monday night because he had a Monday night game, and then they played on Sunday. I think it would have been wiser to pull him out, give McCown the start last night, and I think would have given him a better chance.
425 says, why does Ryan Fitzpatrick always do well, then suck, then go to a new team and start the cycle all over again? Well, this with the Jets, Bills, and Texans before, too.
Yeah, well, you know what the book is for good backup quarterbacks, and he's a very good backup quarterback. If you play him three games, he can win you three. If you play him six games, he can lose you three. Because what ends up happening is that now you have a three-game study that you can look at and say, okay, if we do this to him, we do this to him, here's how we can stop him here, here's how we can stop him there. So, yeah, I think that's one of the keys is that you can look and see what you can get with him and figure it out.
425 says, is Luke Falk's career over before it even started in the NFL?
No. I mean, he got picked up as a third quarterback or fourth quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. I mean, no, he's not out of it yet. I mean, he's, give him time. So, I mean, he wasn't going to play at all this year. Nobody had any anticipation of that happening. So I don't see why you would even think that to be the case.
Yeah, when we talked to quite a few analysts when we were previewing the draft, and I know Bucky Brooks told us that he expected him to sit, but thought that he was someone that could do really well in the future. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Ryan Tannehill's the future for the Dolphins anymore, so
no,
he might get a shot
present.
There.
I mean,
eventually, yeah.
But he's still not bad. But and he's off to a 2-0 start. We'll see if he can sustain it.
253 says, hey, John and Maura, happy Blue Friday. Any update on the Seahawks injury report for this Sunday?
Not yet. I mean, it'll happen at about 1:15, 1:30, somewhere around then. And right now, I'd say that it doesn't look good for two offensive linemen. We'll see. I think there's still an outside chance that maybe Ethan Posick can play. I don't see Justin Britt playing. You know, K.J. Wright's not expected to play. D.J. Fluker will be back. Bobby Wagner's going to be back. You know, they'll get a little bit healthier there. And they'll have Trey Flowers back. So I think right now maybe two scratches on the offensive line and K.J. Wright.
206 says, can you tell me why the Hawks keep sticking with Ifedi? He just never gets any better. From first-time texter Doug in Shoreline.
There's no other option. I mean, the only other option is George Fant, and I think that they want to try to go as Ifedi as long as they possibly can. And you look league-wide. I mean, I talked to a couple of general managers in the last 24 hours. It's as bad of a situation for backup tackles as I think the league has ever had, because of spread offenses and all that stuff. I mean, if you look at the, because again, you're only going to have seven active guys for the most part. If you look at the sixth and seventh guys on each team, you kind of shake your head. I mean, George Fant, I think, can play both tackle positions, but it's rare now that you have a drafted, one or two drafted guys that are sitting in the wings ready to help you out.
425 says, going to my cousin's wedding and I'm asked to dress afternoon cocktail style. What distinguishes afternoon and evening cocktail attire?
Well, I mean, I guess what it comes down to, because I'm not a big dress person myself, is a tux and tails, I guess, is kind of what they're wanting. I mean, you can have a full suit and all that. I guess that can be apropos, but I guess it's the higher class of wedding, the more that they're going to be asking you to dress. I mean, let's put it this way. I know when Pat and I had our wedding, it was going to be all casual for the 65 people that were going to be invited. We weren't going to ask them to, get overly dressed up or have to go to a store or have to rent something. It's like, it is what it is. I mean, you got the invite and you got to follow suit.
I think afternoon cocktail style could probably just mean a collared shirt and dress pants. You don't have to do a tie.
We'd hope so.
Let us know.
Yeah.
206 says, John, any idea on Corey Clement's injury?
He's questionable, so it looks like he has a chance to play, and in fact, they need him to play. So he's going to be part of a rotation in the backfield because they're not going to have Jay Ajayi and they're not going to have Darren Sproles. And so Clement, I mean, I guess he is the Philly special because they have to use him in this game.
425 says, John, ketchup or mustard on a hot dog?
Mustard. I'm more of a mustard guy. It could be Grey Poupon. It could be regular mustard. I think it kind of waters it down and makes it more bland if you put the ketchup on it. So I would go more mustard and then a little bit of relish. Onions are good, too.
All right, 360 says, will the Seahawks use Chris Carson more this week?
They better. I think that they should. I don't know why they got away from him in the game, and I don't understand the fatigue story. That one just didn't make much sense to me. So I think that they really do need to use him in this game and use him a lot.
206 wants to know your prediction for the final score of the Seahawks game.
I got to see the injury report before I do it, so you might have to catch up with me later. I'd say right now, if they squeeze one out, they can maybe squeeze it out 20-17, if they can. And it's a big if.
All right, Professor, I know you don't usually like to do a ton of fantasy questions, but this person's begging for your advice on, they just want someone to put in their flex spot this week, Julio Jones, Aaron Rodgers, or Alex Smith.
Julio Jones, Aaron Rodgers, or Alex Smith? Julio Jones. Julio's a little banged up, but I think that they're going to try to force him the ball, and sometimes it's better to take the receiver, I guess, over the quarterback. You know, Rodgers is still going to be some limitations, and so he may not be there. Alex Smith did not have a really, really good game, so I'll go Julio Jones.
All right, 206 says, do you see Tyler Lockett getting another TD this week?
I can, yeah. I think that, I mean, he's the number one receiver. If they can get some play-action passes going, he's the one that's going to probably be getting the play-action pass. So, yeah, I think he can get one of the touchdowns this week in what might be a 2017 game.
All right, the 360 says, it's Brian from Amboy, Washington, wants to know, is Carroll going to let Shoddy actually run this offense?
He's supposed to. I'm kind of surprised that he did jump in there and did the things that he did. That kind of caught me a little bit cold, and I think it caught a lot of people cold. So, yeah, I mean, that would be the plan, have him run the offense and, you know, let his judgment go in there, not going over and kind of saying, hey, throw some deep passes and try to get this going and all that. So, yeah, I would hope that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I was a little surprised just because he said one voice so many times in the offseason.
Right.
And it didn't seem like it was one voice the other night.
No, it was a couple voices.
All right, the 425 says, will any of these quarterbacks still be on their respective teams after this season? Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, or Andy Dalton?
Of the three, I think Flacco's the one, if they don't make the playoffs, that's not probably going to be sacrificed. I think Dalton's going to be fine. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I think everything's going to stay pat, but I think Flacco's the one that could be available.
253 says, Mr. Clayton, will the defensive line get more pressure on the quarterback this week?
Yes and no. I mean, because again, it's going to be a little bit of different pressure because you got a running quarterback. And I think that, I think the defense will get a little bit better, but still not great. I mean, they're going against a very good offensive line. And that's why I know that you brought up the idea of blitzing. Well, I mean, with Bobby Wagner back, if he's healthy enough, I think, you know, to blitz through the middle, particularly knowing that they have an injury in Joe Looney starting for Travis Frederick at center.
253 says James Carpenter looked pretty impressive for the Jets last night. Why didn't the Hawks retain him?
Because they thought he was a first-round disappointment. I mean, he really didn't fit. I mean, again, they drafted him, but, you know, he was less athletic than Tom Cable wanted. But now he goes over and goes to the Jets, and he's a physical type of guy. And I think that the blocking scheme, at least initially for the Jets, was more man, and that, I think, helped him out. Like, for example, if he would come back in this offense, I think he would fit in a little bit better than a Tom Cable offense.
It's funny. We're getting texts. I think someone's thought that I was Shannon and Lydia this segment.
Really?
My name's Maura, by the way.
Yeah.
No. The 206 says, will the M's offer Haniger an extension this summer?
Possibly. I mean, I think the first thing, it may be more, I think, in 2020, because, I mean, you think about the big contracts, the Robinson Cano contract. They have one more year with Felix Hernandez. And then, of course, if they do something with Nelson Cruz, if they don't do something with Cruz, then they might start to talk about doing some kind of a long-term deal. But, to put those three big salaries, particularly if you give Cruz 14 a year, that may be tough to handle.
All right, Professor, the Graz is in studio, so it's time
to end
the tech segment.
Check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Crosby.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, a big game coming up for a lot of teams this week. I guess let's start off with Washington State.
Yeah, let's.
Because, they go down to USC. USC has a freshman quarterback. The Trojans are 1-2. I mean, is it possible with the young quarterback that the Cougars have, a very deep group of wide receivers and a surprisingly good defense, that they can pull the upset?
I think it's definitely possible. In fact, the line has gone from 5.5 to 3.5 during the week. USC is a bit of a mystery. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be an elite team this year. Lost a lot of guys in the draft last year. But You know, they have three seniors on their offensive line, returned three running backs, and last week against Texas, they had minus 5 yards rushing, which is pretty unbelievable. They're 113th in scoring offense nationally, 117th in rushing offense. Does not make a whole lot of sense for a team that returns so many skill position players. They returned a bunch of their wide receivers from last year as well. They're off a terrible loss to Texas, got annihilated 37-13. Brock is saying in our promo, Clay Helton, the head coach there, is hearing the whispers. So at 1-2, this is a make or break game for USC. But you know, there are issues about how well they're practicing down there. They've got all kinds of different problems. So we'll see. I think Washington State has an excellent shot at this game, although it's tough to tell about the Cougars. They didn't really have a difficult non-conference schedule, but they did sail through it like you're supposed to. So very intrigued by tonight's game, very intrigued. And there will not be a huge crowd there, and they won't be that loud there. I mean, they're down. SC is down right now. So it's a great time to catch them and a great opportunity for Washington State to redefine what their year might be. I said to you earlier when we were talking about them that Mike Leach has changed that program in the extent that you know, when they lose a lot of good players, they don't tend to rebuild. They tend to reload. They tend to stay good. This game will show us how good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a fun thing to kind of watch because, again, it's like this could be, you know, a defining game. And, you know, it's funny because everybody thought this was going to be like a 4-8 Washington State team. And if they win this one, particularly a big conference game on the road, that's four wins right there.
Right, and with a lot more to come. I mean, no matter what the SC's up or down in the Pac-12, you get a win down on their home field, it's a big boost. So I think Washington State's got a great opportunity for the upset here, but on the other hand, I would not be terribly surprised if SC finally, you know, shook off the doldrums and played a little bit more to form. Sometimes a loss like the one they had to Texas can do that. We'll see if it does with this team. But there are definitely some curious things about this SC team that I think really gives Washington State a shot. And the biggest one is just reading a lot of the tweets and quotes that they really haven't been practicing well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually a really bad sign for any football team.
What is wrong with the, of course, you know, you think things are pretty good right now with Stanford and, you know, what you can see. But what's wrong with the other part of the Pac-12? I mean, UCLA is a disaster right now. I mean, you know, Arizona's not doing very well. I mean, what's going on?
Well, I mean, you know, UCLA is, when they hired Chip Kelly, in their estimation, they were going to get back to an elite spot, and they still might, although it doesn't feel like it's going to happen this year, obviously. But Chip Kelly was very successful at Oregon. I mean, you brought in Herm Edwards, the coach at Arizona State, who got off to a good start. They're playing the Huskies this weekend, of course, but lost to San Diego State. SC's been good, but they're just down this year. So I think it's something of a down year for the Pac-12, it appears to be at this point. Although, you know, looking at Washington, they gave Auburn a tremendous game. And I think the perspective would be changed a little bit because Washington would be a top four, top five team had they won that game, would be considered a team for the bowl championship series, you know, or for the playoff, forgive me. And, you know, they still might be, but probably aren't. It's just a little bit of a down year, it feels like, in the South in particular. I mean, I think the North, Stanford is, as you pointed out, Stanford is legit. They're good top to bottom. I mean, they have really created a powerhouse down there. And Oregon looks to be on the way back, too, to being what they were, so... And if Washington State is good with Washington, man, that's a brutal, brutal half of the conference. So,
Oregon State's not bad.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Oregon State's still got a long way to go, I think. But mm-hmm. It definitely, you know, the conference is up and down. It's maybe you tend to get a perspective from the LA schools that if they're down, the whole conference is down. If UCLA and USC are down, then it's a down Pac-12, and it's really not the case this year. But as always, in college football, time will tell. They're getting into conference play now. We'll see if teams beat each other up. If they do, they don't generate the respect that the SEC does in terms of losing games. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see eventually how they play out. But they didn't do particularly good in the non-conference schedule after doing very good in the bowl season. We'll see what happens this week, the first week where a lot of big conference games are being played.
Huskies get a home game coming up against Arizona State and Herm Edwards. Big favorites in that one.
Yeah, on reputation, this has been a difficult game for Washington in the Chris Peterson era. They've struggled with Arizona State, and Arizona State brings back a lot of the same players that they did before. But, I think Washington's win over Utah is being underrated in some aspects, in some circles, because of Jake Browning's on-and-off performance. that was, it's very difficult to go on the road and win, especially in the circumstance they had in Utah. Their defense was absolutely suffocating. I think they might have the best secondary in all of college football. So I think it's on reputation. It's not necessarily on the nature of this series, and any win is going to be a good win here. But Jake Browning needs a bounce back game, and again, I don't think he's falling apart or anything like that. He's just making some decisions that you haven't seen him make before, and making some mistakes that he hasn't made before. Very much like some other quarterbacks who have stayed for a senior year when maybe they could have gone out as a junior and have not had it go their way. So, you know, it's not like he's doing terrible. He's just making some mistakes, and he'll always be compared to his performance of 2 years ago where he was Heisman Trophy worthy. But if Washington limits the mistakes, they should be a better team than Arizona State.
And then, of course, you have the Seahawks going against your former team, the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I know talking to Todd Archer, he's still trying to figure out what kind of team they have. Seattle's trying to figure out what kind of team they have. What kind of game do you expect?
Well, I think Dallas is trying to figure out what kind of team they have on offense.
Yeah.
I think that's their issue. I think defensively, they got something special going on. Something very special going on with that defensive line in particular. Got a good coordinator. Their defense has been very strong the first two games. It's going to be difficult for the Seahawks offense to deal with. We know that. They're a team that's probably going to be able to rush four and get pressure on Russell Wilson. It's going to make it difficult for the passing game. So, once again, it's a week where you need to see the running game make something happen. We'll see if it can. I think that Seahawks could certainly win this game, but it's going to probably depend on turnovers and their defense, which would mean like a 17-14, 14-10 game, something like that, 20-17, a very low-scoring game, is the likelihood in this contest, unless Dallas breaks out on offense, which they have not done. They've revamped their offensive line to a great extent, and it hasn't been that productive. They you know, obviously losing Dez Bryant, losing Jason Witten. They got new skill position players. Offensively against the Giants, they were okay. Against the Carolina Panthers in week one, they were terrible. But their defense was really good in both games. And as we saw against the Bears last week, the Seahawks' issue is on offense. So this is a tough one for them. It's a very tough one for them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's like I know the last couple of weeks, as the injury report and the weeks kept on going on, you start saying, I don't know if I can say that they're going to win because so many things seem to be working against them. And now it comes down to they could be going into this game without Justin Britt, Ethan Posick, and all of a sudden the continuity of the offensive line not there.
Yeah, and the offensive line has not been stellar to begin with. So, I mean, you may be getting DJ Fluker back, which is a positive, but yeah, it's going to be – look, no sugarcoating it. I mean, we'll see how legit Dallas is in general, but defensively I think they're real legit. I mean, they've got an up-and-coming defense, a very young defense in some key spots, and they got good leadership with Sean Lee and DeMarcus Lawrence on that front line. Taco Charlton is really turning into a special player, I think. What are they calling themselves, the young boys now or something like that with a Z? Mm-hmm. That's a Chris Richard, saying, hey, look, come up with a nickname. Legion of Boom, work for the Seahawks. Give yourself some internal pride, and they've got it going on. So I think the thing that I've noticed during the week in looking at it is Dallas brings a very good defense to the table, and that's bad news for the Seahawks offense that's been struggling.
No doubt. And so now that's going to be a tough one. But, of course, they have the home crowd. Russell Wilson obviously needs a big game. I mean, that's, I think, one of the big things that they have to have. I mean, they've got to get a good game out of Russell Wilson to make it easier for the defense.
Well, he's got to just not make the mistakes that he made in the last game. And look, this feels much more like the first two games, like a game that – and they actually were within a touchdown in game one. Game two, not really, because they were down after the interception, down 14 and scored with just a couple of seconds left. But, they'll be within a touchdown, is my opinion, in the fourth quarter. And again, that's where Russell Wilson's supposed to shine. And he has faltered in the past couple of weeks. But as you illustrated with the question marks on the offensive line and a very good defense coming in, it's going to be difficult to do. So we'll see. This would be a great – turnovers the Seahawks have gotten, they haven't been able to make much of them. And they may get a chance to get some more this week.
So what do we have on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
Well, we got a Hall of Famer, two of them actually. Steve Largent is joining us at 12:45.
Fantastic.
And John Clayton, you're familiar with him in the NFL Hall of Fame, joining us at 2 o'clock. Mike Blauer is talking baseball at 1 o'clock.
That sounds like it's going to be a great show. So talk to you at 2 and talk to you tomorrow.
At 10.
At 10, of course. I'll be back tomorrow, 9 to 12, Monday at 10. Our thanks to Maura Dooley for producing this show and running this show. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.